You know, it all leads to us. So we have to step up in order to save these species for future generations and for our children to see, because we don't have much time. We've got like 5 to 10 years before we can possibly save the last rhinos, pangolins, tigers on this planet. I mean, we are in a race against extinction. And it's really concerning that there has never been such a period of time like this in the history of our planet where humans have had such a negative impact on our planet and our species. It is time to step up. We must, otherwise we're going to lose them.
This is the Energy Motto Podcast, a show for the youth, for the curious, and for those seeking to discover more about their inner and outer world.
We are bringing on the experts, guides, and leaders that are shaping the path to an exciting era.
And we are your hosts, Emilio Ortiz
and Alvaro Jodar.
What's up, guys, and welcome to the Energy Motto. Today we're presenting to you a model and Hollywood actress turned passionate animal activist and leader in the environmental movement. Katie Cleary began her career by starring in hit TV shows like America's Next Top Model and playing roles for consecutive seasons in Deal or No Deal. Other on-camera appearances included hit series like How to Get Away with Murder and blockbuster movies like Marvel's Iron Man. Her mission took a new direction after a major life event that gave her space to rethink and merge her talent in entertainment and apply it to her passion for animal welfare issues. Her leading voice has enabled her to raise thousands of dollars to support crucial animal issues through the organization that she founded called Peace for Animals. Her background in the film industry gave her the skills necessary to become the executive producer and creator of the award-winning documentary Give Me Shelter on Netflix. In the upcoming months, she will be releasing the follow-up of this documentary called Why on Earth. She has also founded the first ever World Animal News Network that highlights the latest eye-opening stories in animal welfare. Her mission has been to be a voice for the voiceless and reverse the unfortunate human events that have caused much suffering to the species that share the planet with us. In this conversation, we will raise to the surface very emotional issues such as the atrocities of puppy mills, wildlife poaching, how the meat and dairy industry brainwashed us, protecting endangered species, the journey from Hollywood to activism, and more stories that will for sure raise a spark of action in you. We wanted to personally thank all of you who have been tuning into this podcast week after week. And if you're new to this channel, welcome. Get ready for an amazing conversation with the celebrity animal caretaker and guardian, Katie Cleary. Enjoy. Katie Cleary, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. Thank you for giving us your time. We're about ready to have a very interesting conversation. I came across you on Instagram, actually, and I saw all the amazing work you were doing. You have this World Animal News Network, and you just report on everything that's going around the world on animal conservation, endangered species, lobbying, all of these things. But what was most curious to me was diving into what you actually built your career upon, and you started your career was in Hollywood. So I wanted to know, like, it seems that you wanted to become an actress from a very young age, I've read, and I wanted to ask you, what do you think planted that seed, or who planted that seed for you to want to start going into that space first?
Yeah, you know, I was really young at the time. I was about 11 years old when I started, and you know, it was yeah, it was always kind of a dream of mine to get involved in entertainment and modeling, but my passion, my true passion, was animal welfare. So to be honest, you know, I was with my mom downtown Chicago at a festival, and an agent had approached us from Elite Kids at that time, because I was so young, and she said, you know, have you ever thought of modeling? And my mom didn't really want me to get involved in the business because, you know, how hard it can be. You need really thick skin, especially at a young age, starting out in the modeling industry. So, you know, I always wanted to get involved. So I said, yes, let's set up a meeting. I would love to, you know, kind of get my toes wet and see what it's all about. And then I actually signed with, it's called Stewart Talent at the time. So it was a division of Elite Models in Chicago. And that's kind of how my career began. So, but you know, around that age, I would also rescue animals and was heavily involved in working to protect endangered species, even at such a young age. So, you know, it was really about using modeling and acting and entertainment as that platform to raise awareness for something greater, which is for the animals.
For sure, for sure. And at that point, you were balancing between college, modeling, and then you got pulled into the Hollywood landscape. What was going through your mind? Were you were in Wisconsin at the point? You were saying, should I go to LA? And I know the ambitions that you had were strongly supported by your mother. So how did that all go down when you were deciding whether or not to go for it?
Well, to be honest, I always knew I was going to end up in California, and, you know, and really, you know, dive into entertainment, you know, and, you know, adding acting to it as well. So really, you know, started out with the modeling and a little bit of acting, but I really got involved in entertainment when I moved to Los Angeles on another level. So, you know, through America's Next Top Model, I actually did that show. That was the first big thing I did in entertainment. And that was when I was in college. And so that kind of gave me the idea to move out to California to pursue my dreams. And then the first audition that I got was the TV show Deal or No Deal on NBC. And I booked that. So we were under contract with NBC for a few years. And that was great because it was an amazing stepping stone for, you know, for what I'm doing now, really. So it brought me to this point. I'm almost 40 years old. So it kind of shows my age that I've been doing it for a long time. Inevitably, this was the end all be all, which was the animals. So, you know, all this time, you know, spending and, you know, the TV shows and the modeling campaigns and, you know, all of this has led me to my passion and my dream, which is protecting animals. So here's one right now.
Is that a cat?
Yes.
A cat? Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. Nine. And one of the skills that I've seen you like you really refine is your camera hosting and your reporting. For those of you listening, you have to hop on YouTube to watch Katie's getting attacked by her animals. So I wanted to ask you, like, that skill of camera hosting right now is really reflected into the work you're doing, which is raising awareness towards wildlife conservation, animals, animal protection. And I wanted to ask you did you always see that was a skill that you were going to need for your passion, or did it come naturally to you? Did you have to work hard to refine that camera hosting, being in front of the camera? How did that all go down?
You know, it's interesting because I always was really natural in front of the camera. So the one thing that I kind of struggled in between, and I've never told anyone this, so you're the first to know, is the acting and the hosting, because I'm more of a personality. So it was actually really difficult for me to get into acting and memorize, even though I can do it and it's great. And I've booked a lot of things as far as, you know, TV shows and movies and things like that. But because of my personality, and I am a personality, I think the hosting just comes naturally. And I really didn't realize that I would be using that skill, you know, the 27 years I've been in entertainment, to now apply that to saving animals and World Animal News and what we're doing now with our platform and our news platform. So, yeah, it's really interesting how sometimes you don't realize, like, you know, why did I major in business and marketing, and why, you know, why did I need all these writing skills? And I had no idea I was going to be a founder of a news network for animals. It just kind of happened. And then even the legislative stuff that I've gotten involved in with a partner foundation, I didn't know that we were going to be passing laws for animals and really doing things on a larger scale to really truly affect change. I think that's one of the biggest ways is to pass legislation on a federal and state level for animals, because it really, especially, you know, if the rules are followed, then you're doing good, but they have to be enforced. So, you know, all of that combined, looking back, I would have never guessed. You know, I knew it was going to be involved in animal welfare. I just didn't know to what extent. I thought maybe a veterinarian, a zoologist, but I love what I'm doing now. And, you know, 100% my passion. I can still incorporate entertainment in it. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that story, that's what I love about hearing those types of stories, because it just really reflects how the universe always has something in store for you. Even if, I mean, I'm thinking about a quote from Steve Jobs. He says, "You can never connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking back." So I love that. And your story really highlights the essence of that message. So I wanted to get into now, when you founded this animal network, Peace for Animals as well, the nonprofit, was it hard to leave what you were doing behind to pursue this new passion of yours?
You know, it's interesting that you asked me that question, because that was, it was a big crossroads for me. I had gone through a lot about six years ago, very publicly. And, you know, I really left it in God's hands. You know, I prayed for years about this, to figure out if I do I continue in entertainment, or do I incorporate the two, or do I leave entertainment behind? Because I knew it for so long. It's the only thing that, you know, it was like my life for 27 years. So, you know, when you know something that well, it's like, how can I just leave that? You know, how I prayed to God to see, you know, if he would guide me down the right path to either incorporate the two or just leave entertainment and just focus on animal welfare. And to be honest, I didn't realize what it was going to be at the time, because I was so, how to say, not distraught over it. I was just very, at a crossroads. You know, I really didn't know what direction my career was going to go. And he answered my prayers, which was merging the two. So I don't have to give up entertainment. I can use that still as a platform for what I love, which is the animals. So it was difficult for a while there. I would say about a year, I really prayed on it, but he showed me the way. So I think faith has always led me in the right direction, and my prayers have always been answered. So yeah.
Definitely. That's a really cool perspective, and thank you for sharing that. It really highlights the capacity for us to reinvent ourselves, even with the skills that we've acquired in the past. So, I mean, even for people listening, most of our listeners are very young, but their skills that they're acquiring right now, they don't know how they can apply that. Like, a lot of the jobs that are going to exist in 5 to 10 years haven't even been created. So it's really dialing in on your passion. What is it that you like gets you up, that spark? And you found it. And you found it in what you're doing now. It shows. I was just watching your documentary, the Shelter.
Yeah.
Give Me Shelter. And every time that you were on the screen, like asking questions, you can just tell the passion that you had for this topic. And that's what I love about like seeing people that fired up. So what was the turning point of you finding that like inner spark, and caring so much about the animal world?
You know, honestly, it was around that time. It was that magic age of 11, 12 years old. You know, people would ask me, my family would ask me, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I always said a veterinarian, a zoologist, you know, and then I thought, gosh, you know, 8 years of school, it's actually harder to be a veterinarian zoologist than a human doctor, because you have to learn so many different species, and there's just so much to it. So I thought, okay, I'm not the biggest fan of school, so maybe I have my own organization one day. So, you know, it's just, you know, it was a calling, I would say. It was a calling. It's a gift from God, this mission and this purpose, because I wake up every morning so excited for my job. And that's why I encourage all of the people that are listening now, all of your viewers, all of the young people, you know, go after your passion, whatever gets you fired up, you know, in life, as far as, you know, for work, you know, whether it be, it could be anything, children, helping children. It could be, you know, of course, helping animals, the environment, you know, finding an alternate for plastic. I mean, that's pretty amazing. Something to help, you know, or, you know, if it's not something that directly helps, you know, if you don't want to get involved in, you know, philanthropy or anything like that, you could utilize your company. It could be, you know, I don't know, a t-shirt company or whatever, to then help something, you know, that's greater than yourself. So, You know, I think that it doesn't have to be directly related to helping, but you can utilize that platform to then, you know, eventually help something, you know, that's it. So.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Now I wanted to get into all the projects that you're involved in right now. What are you doing right now? What is your day-to-day look like with the World Animal News Network, with Peace for Animals, with filmmaking, documentaries? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So actually, we just finished the second documentary. It's called Why on Earth, and it's a follow-up to Give Me Shelter. Give Me Shelter came out in 2015, and it was something that I took a chance on. I used my whole savings to produce and write and construct that film, and I actually asked my best friend to direct the first one. And so this one is now through my charity Peace for Animals, and we traveled around the world for 3 years, Africa, Indonesia. You know, we went to the Capitol and filmed the legislative process. So really showing the issues on the ground, what's happening with the rhino horn, the ivory trade, the people that are rescuing endangered elephants and rhinos in Kenya and South Africa, people that are saving orangutans from the palm oil industry in Indonesia, and then bringing it back to the states and really showing how you can affect change on a federal and a state level. So, because that's, I mean, that was my day-to-day for a while before the pandemic was, you know, the legislative stuff. I mean, legislation is, I think, one of the number one ways that we can affect change on a large scale for our world, not just the animals, but for our environment, our oceans, you know, what's happening with climate change. There's so much that we can do. So this documentary has taken, well, the first one took 3 years, which was Give Me Shelter. And you can find it now on, I think, iTunes, Amazon, and you can actually find it on our website too. There's a worldwide link. It's just give-me-shelter.com. And then the second one, like I said, is a follow-up titled Why on Earth, and we're shopping it around right now. So I'm hoping that eventually people will be able to see it, hopefully maybe on Nat Geo or Netflix or one of the major platforms. So, it's just us on the ground really showing these issues firsthand and how people can help.
What I love about these documentaries is that it gives you such a deep dive onto so many topics. Like a lot of these industries that you see on the surface, you say, okay, they're making their profit. They're doing good. They're giving back. They're creating jobs. But then when you actually get into what is going behind the scenes, such as the one that impacted me the most in Give Me Shelter was the puppy mills. Can you get into a little bit about that? I think it's important to raise awareness.
Yeah. You know, I found out that that was one of the main reasons why Netflix picked up that documentary, because of the puppy mill footage and just the fact that a lot of people don't know what really happens when you're going into a pet store and purchasing a dog, or going to a breeder and purchasing a dog. A lot of these are backyard breeders. A lot of them are from the Midwest. A lot of these, you know, mom and dad dogs and cats or whatever is being bred are never let out of the cage. So they're living in their own feces. They are, they're dehydrated. There's no water. There's no food. They're emaciated, and they're just forced to continue to breed and, you know, litter after litter until they can't any longer. And, you know, they're thrown away basically. And so people don't understand is that, you know, you're looking at that adorable puppy in the window, but you don't know where that puppy or kitten came from. So, you know, I would always encourage people to adopt, not shop, do your research, and, you know, go to your local shelter, and you can find an amazing animal, and you can find a lot of purebreds. I mean, it's up to 50% of animals at shelters are purebreds, because a lot of them, you know, people just will buy them for thousands of dollars, you know, from a breeder or a pet store, and then they don't want them anymore and they drop them off at the shelter. You know, so you can find amazing animals. And I mean, all of my animals, you know, I've got 12 that I've rescued through my organization, and I've rescued hundreds more, but 12 permanent. And I mean, they were all saved from the street, from the shelter, and they literally thank us every day for saving them. It's just, you know, it's so worth it. It really is. So I always encourage people, if you can't adopt, you know, just foster. And you can save a life, and then you can try to find a home for the animals. So, yeah. Puppy mills, they're a thing of the past.
That's good. That's very good. Good to hear. I was looking into the World News report that you gave today, actually, in early, right now we're mid-January. And you were talking about that there was like 120 groups that were pushing President-elect Joe Biden to report mm-hmm. the extinction crisis as a national emergency. Mm-hmm. What do you think, what impacts would that do to humanity as a whole if America, such a big country, declares that as a threat?
Well, it would just set a precedence. It would set an example for the rest of the world. And I think we need to start stepping up as a country, because we are, some people may not agree with me, one of the strongest countries in the world, if not the strongest country in the world. And everyone else looks up to what we do. So, so goes the United States, so goes the rest of the world. They say, so goes California, so goes the rest of the world, because we're the fifth largest economy. So we need to set that example. And I think that, whatever happens with the election, I think that President-elect Joe Biden should absolutely step up and declare the extinction crisis a national emergency, because then it'll give it purpose and it'll give it more meaning that, wow, the United States is taking this seriously. And so, and we must too, especially Africa, especially Indonesia, Asia, countries that have utilized these endangered species for medicinal purpose, that there's really no such thing, for rhino horn and ivory and all these
Chinese medicine, or
there's no real proven medicinal purpose for those things. Yeah. So, of the past, and it's archaic, and we need to change, but we have to set the example. So I believe that would be a huge game changer. Hmm. Yeah,
and that's a huge segue into the wildlife poaching that was also in your documentary, and you talk about a lot. And I'm just looking at the list: tigers, elephants, rhinos, orangutans. Like, these are species that we might not even know that our children are gonna see, and maybe That really like hits home, because I mean, for me personally, one of my favorite animals is the tiger. Just it's the courage, the everything that it represents. And also I know for you, the elephant. How can we start reversing the effects of this endangered species, and conserve these animals?
To be honest, I think it's the demand in Asia and other countries. We have to tighten up regulations, and we have to prove that there's, like I said, no medicinal purpose for tiger bone wine or rhino horn or, pangolin scale or shark fin soup. I mean, how ridiculous is this? It's just this tradition, so-called tradition, that people think this is going to help them, have a bigger libido or whatever it may be. It's absolutely false. So we really have to start moving towards having that be socially unacceptable and calling out people, and whether it be, who knows, tourism companies that are promoting elephant riding, or these trophy hunting outfitters in Africa. We have to start calling out those people that are putting our endangered species at risk. Mm-hmm. So, making it socially unacceptable, like I said, and also education is key, and educating people. And that's why I founded World Animal News and Peace for Animals, because no one knew what the hell was going on. I mean, I did, because I was involved. All my animal welfare friends did, all the people we work with legislation do, but no one, not the rest of the world, because it's not reported in mainstream media. So we had to come up with something. And, I found 2012, and we just keep trekking away every day, really trying to raise awareness and get the word out, because the more eyes that we can get on these issues, the more we have a chance of getting people's attention to actually care and educate them and why these animals are so important. And eventually, if they go extinct, they'll be the first, and then we'll be the last. So there's an absolute connection between these animals and humans, because we're going to see the adverse effects. We'll be the last to see the adverse effects of it. Yeah. It all leads to us. So we have to step up in order to save these species for future generations and for our children to see, because we don't have much time. We've got like 5 to 10 years before we can possibly save the last rhinos, pangolins, tigers on this planet. I mean, we are in a race against extinction. And it's really concerning that there has never been such a period of time like this in the history of our planet where humans have had such a negative impact on our planet and our species. It is time to step up. We must, otherwise we're going to lose them. Yeah. And we'll lose this.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people hearing this right now are just maybe angry or want to take action. And I know all of the things that you cover on your news network and all of these things in animal welfare is such a big rabbit hole. And I wanted just to know, what are the main things that you think that we should start focusing on, especially our younger generations, that they can start, you know, pushing and creating change, moving the needle? What are these most important things?
Yeah, I think using social media for good, using your platforms, sharing information about important topics, just like, you know, the new segment that we did today, we do a couple a month just to update people on what you know, is happening in animal welfare, environmental issues, legislation, all of that. And just by sharing that, you know, sharing our articles, spreading the word, telling your family. And I think the number one thing that people can do that they don't realize every single day to save the lives of animals is go plant-based. And if you can't go plant-based 100%, just eliminate, you know, one or two, you know, meals that involve meat from your diet a day, you know, or a week, you know, you can start there. You know, you really don't need, I mean, there's so much protein in plants, but we've been conditioned and trained by the meat and dairy industry for so long that, you know, you have to drink your milk, you know, vitamin D, and you gotta, you know, eat the protein, you know, you gotta have your steak and you gotta have your chicken. It's absolutely false. There's a lot of protein in plants, and the largest animals on the planet, some of the largest animals on the planet are vegan, vegetarian. They're herbivores. So
which, you know, ones?
Rhinos, elephants, look at cows, look at pigs. I mean, some of the largest animals on the planet, you know, horses, and they're the strongest animals on the planet. So it's an absolute myth that you need to eat meat to get enough protein. I've been vegan for how long now? About 8 years. And I'm doing great.
You are.
Yeah.
Especially.
You feel, you know, yeah. Less laid down. Yeah.
It's a big topic, and I wanted to highlight also the legislative part of it. So how can we get more involved in that arena?
Yeah. So unfortunately last year was a bust. So a lot of the bills that we had with our partner Social Compassion legislation, just didn't end up going through just because of, you know, COVID, sadly. So the session, people were not in session. They were out. So it's just this year, I don't know if this year is going to be different. I pray that it is, but right now, the way it's looking, it might end up the same as last year. So, you know, I think that what we'll do is, you know, when we know bills, you know, are being put out, which, you know, we don't know 100% yet, we will put out a call to action, and then we'll have people, you know, call the Capitol, call their senators, call their assembly members, and ask them to vote in favor of the legislation that we're working on.
Mm-hmm. And on your end, I know in your website says one of your ambitions is to open the Peace for Animals Reserve to rescue and rehabilitate endangered species in South Africa, especially. Is there a reason why you have such a strong connection to South Africa, or where did that come about?
Actually, you know, South Africa would be great, but really anywhere in Africa, you know, who knows, like it could be Tanzania, Botswana, you know, Kenya, and really anywhere. I love what David Sheldrick has done. I love what Care for Wild has done with elephants and rhinos. I love, you know, these amazing organizations, amazing people that have literally dedicated their lives to saving the last of these iconic species. So just when we were filming there a couple of years ago for the documentary, I was so inspired, and I thought, gosh, how can I really affect change? And I'm like, you know, of course, maybe I don't think I'll ever retire, but when I get a little bit older, I think, you know, but definitely that would be a dream of mine to start rescuing, rehabilitate animals and work more on an individual level, I think that, you know, affecting change on a grand scale is amazing, and we're doing it, but I would like to work on a personal level with these animals. And I just think that that would be, yeah, it's just, it's such a dream of mine. So I hope that we can be able to do that eventually. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a blessing that the job that you're doing with these documentaries, you get to travel around, film. I want to know maybe some stories that you have, particularly when you've been to these countries where you're mind blown just by what you're seeing out there that maybe we don't see in the regular, you know, day to day. We're living in cities. We don't see any of this stuff. So you have a very unique perspective in that aspect.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite countries is Kenya, and it's just, it's the people, it's the landscape. I feel like Africa is where my heart is. And when the first time I landed in South Africa and Kenya, I was like, wow, you know, I truly feel like I've been here before. And I feel like this is literally the history of nature. This is where it all began. I've always felt such a pull and connection to Africa, but until I really experienced it on my own and met the people and, you know, met these amazing elephants and rhinos and monkeys. And I was absolutely blown away. And I said, this is where I want to be. This is where I need to be to affect a change that I really want to have in this world. So, yeah, I mean, the stories, there's so many stories. I would say one of the most impactful stories, it's actually going to be told in the documentary. I can't give the whole thing away, but
no spoilers.
Yeah. Seriously. Meeting the last two female northern white rhinos on Earth, and then visiting Sudan, the last northern male white rhino's grave, and realizing that he was the last of his species, and what man and humans have done to these animals to drive them to not the brink of extinction. And I was looking extinction in the eye and realizing this is so real. And as we filmed Sudan's grave, there was a rhino, I would say maybe 250 yards away behind, just laying there sleeping behind his grave. He was the only one there. And it was like such a iconic moment that I'll never forget. And we have it on film, and just realizing, wow, here's the grave of the last northern white rhino. There's a southern male white rhino 250 yards away. And we're filming this right now. And this is the whole purpose of why we're here, why we're doing what we're doing in order to save this species. And I can visualize it right now. It was one of the most amazing moments, I would say, in my life. Just, I mean, you know, just the dichotomy of it and the fact that it was just such a visceral experience. I can't even explain it to you. It's like something unlike I've never witnessed in my life. It really put into perspective why I'm here and in the mission, and I believe from God. So, you know, and then everyone has their own stories and their own belief systems, but, yeah, there's been too many coincidences in my life to believe otherwise. You know, that's why I have such a strong faith.
Wow. Amazing. Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah.
Very, very emotional. Just, I can't even imagine what it's like being in front of the last member of a species. And yeah. I mean, this question I'm about to ask probably has no answer, but I know these animals are sentient beings. Do you know, like, what is going through their mind? Do they know that they're one of the last in their species? Because in the end, our instincts is to reproduce and let the species go on. And if they see that there's no possibility for that, I just can't imagine what they feel, you know. It's a very tough position.
I think they know, and they're very aware. They're very smart. I mean, elephants especially are one of the smartest animals on the planet. Rhinos too. But elephants have the longest memory, right? They remember everything. So, you know, there's been instances of elephants where they've been separated when they were young, and then they were, you know, in terrible conditions in a circus or in a roadside zoo, and then they were reintroduced at a sanctuary, and they remember each other, and they run up to each other, and they, you know, like hug each other with their trunks, and you know, it's just incredible. you know, we have so much to learn from them. And just because we don't speak the same language doesn't mean that, you know, they don't have other capabilities that, of course, obviously we know that, you know, that humans don't. I mean, they have capabilities of, you know, communicating on a different octave than humans, that we could hear it to a certain extent, but it's such a low octave to where they could hear each other from hundreds of miles away. We're not able to do that. So it's interesting how, you know, we think we're the smartest because, you know, of what we've done to the planet, sadly. I mean, it doesn't make us look very smart, but I believe that these animals are very aware and maybe even smarter than us, you know? Yeah. So I think a lot to learn. And I think it's about just also sitting and observing these animals. If you get a chance to meet them one day and go to Africa, I would encourage everyone that I know, I have encouraged everyone I know and everyone who's listening to experience it firsthand and visit Africa, visit Indonesia, visit these amazing places where you can see the last of these animals in the wild, because it is so worth it. There's nothing like it that I've ever experienced on this planet.
Yes. So, yeah. Yeah. And we've had the little glimpse of seeing what that world is by the documentaries that are being released on Netflix. Your documentaries is just mind-blowing to see the natural world in action, and we don't even realize how extraordinary it is. It's like we see the animals, but then we don't see what goes behind that. Like we don't see what their life looks like. They're, as you said, the extraordinary capabilities they have, the wisdom, the intelligence. Even some animals' intelligence blow me away. Even so,
yeah, very smart, and we don't give them enough credit. And like I said, you know, if we just lived peacefully like a lot of these animals, this world would be a lot different. Mm-hmm. So I think it's time for us to kind of take a step back and really look at the destruction that humans are having to this planet. And we need to fix things before it's too late. So that's my...
And developing, I would say, just that compassion for other animals is just an amazing place to start. I mean, we have that for our dogs, you know, we have that for our pets. Mm-hmm. Sadly, unfortunately, I recently had my dog of 13 years. We had to put her down because she was infested with lung cancer. So mm-hmm. I got to see her like being put down in my arms. And it was, I think, one of the most crazy emotional experiences I've went through in my life. Yeah. And I realized one of the quotes in your documentary was, until one has loved an animal, a part of one's soul remains unawakened. And that resonated a lot with me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an incredible quote. I mean, there's so many amazing, you know, quotes and also people, you know, like Gandhi and, you know, gosh, so many, I can't think of them off the top of my head, but Gandhi, for one, was just such a compassionate leader, I would say, for, you know, obviously for the planet, but also for animals. People don't realize that, you know, Jane Goodall's another one. Jane. But, you know, people like that just, they're icons, they're leaders in this movement. You know, they'll never be forgotten because of what they've done. Their legacy will be carried on. So, you know, I'm blessed to be a part of this movement because it's always been a dream of mine. And so it's something that, like, you know, to, like I said, wake up every day and pursue your passion. I mean, that's what I would say. The biggest piece of advice for anyone who's watching is that don't, if you're not happy every morning when you wake up and, you know, and you don't like your job, get out of it, quit, try to find something that you're really passionate about, and that you would do for free, you know,
and especially, that's what I would say. Especially if the planet needs it. I was going to say
planet needs it more than ever.
Yeah.
So yeah, incorporate your passion in your work. You've won. Mm. So yeah.
And it's important to have these people around us that we look up to. I mean, you were mentioning Gandhi, Jane Goodall. One of my homeboys is David Attenborough. I love that guy.
How could I David too. Oh my gosh, they're all just amazing. David is just, wow. I didn't realize, you know, I watched his latest series on Netflix and I didn't realize that he's been working on this since he was like in his teens.
Yeah.
Traveling his whole life. I had no idea that he was that big of an advocate. I mean, you know, you think that maybe he's just, of course he loves animals, but you know, he's so good at narrating and you don't realize the depth of his career in conservation. I didn't realize it until I saw the documentary. So I was just blown away. He's an amazing leader. So we need more people like him.
Yeah. And just on that note, what do you think we can incorporate from what these people are doing? Of course, they're using their voices and spreading awareness, but what are some things that these leaders, such as Gandhi, you mentioned Jane Goodall, what can we learn from them?
Well, I think that, you know, they have the experience, and that's the thing. They've lived these amazing lives on this planet. They've seen a lot. So, you know, I think that, I mean, the world knows them and looks up to them, and they're fighting for something greater than themselves. And that's what I would, another piece of advice is that, you know, we all have a voice. We all have the ability to speak up for something that is unjust, that's something that needs attention. And now more than ever, we need people to speak out, especially young people, but speak out for something greater than yourself. So that's why I'm just kind of in awe of what David and Jane and other people like them do, Greta Thunberg, because their mission was, I believe, given from a greater power, given from God. And, you know, they're doing an amazing job. So we just need more people fighting for the animals.
Yeah.
We just don't have people. Trying to recruit some people. Yeah.
100%, 100%. We got to get more people on this movement. And one of the things is just the people that tie themselves to a mission greater than themselves are also the healthiest, happiest people on the planet. I mean, you see David Attenborough, he's 100 years old and he's just smiling all the time.
You meant, let me say that, but it's okay. Yeah. He's, you know, gosh, but he's lived such an amazing life to be David and see what he's seen, you know. And the sad thing is also the destruction that he's seen. So, you know, it was much different 50 years ago than it is now, sadly. But that's why we need the young people to speak out. You know, we need the Gen X. We do. The millennials are, you know, we've done what we can and we're still doing it, but we need the younger generation. So, yeah.
And we need each other. We need the older generations, the generations above us, to give us their education, their wisdom, their experience, so then we can actually become more aware and take action in the future. Yeah. One of the conclusions from your documentary, Give Me Shelter, is that we are moving in the right direction. So I wanted to leave off with that, maybe how you see in the future that we're making a positive step forward, or mm-hmm. or are we? How do you see it in your eyes?
You know what? You know, in the animal welfare movement, we kind of all agree that like you make, you know, one step of progress and then I feel like, and then it's taken away. And then you have one more step of progress and then it's taken away. And it's like, we keep going back and forth. But I can tell you right now is that people are starting to wake up and they're starting to become more aware. And, you know, they're starting to become passionate about, like I said, something greater than themselves. And the people in my movement, we've seen a big shift, I think. And not just animal welfare, environmental movement. You know, we've got a lot of marine wildlife organizations that are doing great work, you know, because sadly, a lot of people, you know, they have to be able to see it firsthand, you know, in order to really care. And so with the marine wildlife, it's like, you know, what, our 70% of our earth is covered in ocean. So you can't really see what's happening, but there's a lot happening with the trash and, you know, now all the masks ending up in the ocean. It's just terrible. So, you know, there are positive steps being taken, but we need more. We need more people. We need more help. We need more awareness. So that's why I think the sharing and, you know, if you have a great documentary you've watched, you know, on Natgeo or Netflix or whatever, share it, you know, tell your followers about it. If you heard something that's like disturbing on World Animal News or whatever, any platform in regards to, you know, the environment, animal welfare, tell somebody, tell people about it. You know, can you believe that, you know, 46 million turkeys are killed for Thanksgiving alone each year? You know, I didn't know that until a couple of years ago. I was shocked. For one day, one celebration, 46 million turkeys, that needs to change. That needs to change. And, you know, and why isn't that in mainstream media? So, you know, I think that we need more leaders. And yeah, that's why I encourage people to join us, join the movement for the animals.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah. I agree 100% with you. And I wanted to start wrapping this podcast up. And first of all, just expressing my gratitude to you, giving us your time, your experiences, some stories that maybe we probably wouldn't have heard otherwise. So thank you for being on this podcast and sharing with us your story. Sure.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. And where can people find you, Katie? What are you up to right now? We know we have the release of the newest documentary, which is Why on Earth, right?
Yeah, Why on Earth. So we will definitely keep you guys posted. You can follow Why on Earth Film on Instagram, and then you can follow me. It's just Katie Cleary 11 on Instagram. Also World Animal News _, and then Peace _ the number 4 animals. And then you can also go to worldanimalnews.com every day to see the latest breaking issues in animal welfare. And we'll also put updates on legislation when we have them. And yeah, we'll definitely make the announcement about the film as soon as we find out what platform it will be released on. So yeah, it's very exciting. Yeah. Good stuff to come.
Yeah, amazing. Really looking forward to that documentary.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. 100%. So we want to start, we have two wrap-up questions for this podcast. The name of this podcast is The Energy Motto. And these are just like final, rapid fire, whatever comes to mind in the heart as well. The name of this podcast, The Energy Motto, we describe the energy as the untapped sources of internal energy that all humans hold, all species hold, to unveil extraordinary physical, mental, emotional, spiritual capabilities. So one of the final wrap-up questions for our guests is, what is it in your life that ignites the flame within? Or in other words, allows you to tap into your energy? It's not something that's so external, but more from within. What is that in your life?
Oh my gosh. To tap into the energy from within, I would say it's got to be my animals. It's the animals, and it's the passion and the mission that God has instilled in me, 100%. I can't attribute it to anything else other than it was a gift that was given to me at a very young age, and I knew why I was put on this earth. It was for them. So yeah, but my animals really, truly are angels on this earth, and they have helped me going this entire time. They are just, yeah, they're my little fur babies. So yeah, it's them and God.
Amazing. Yeah. And you just said it, like, it's the gift that we come with, equipped, pre-equipped, who knows?
Yeah.
But a lot of us don't take action on that and don't listen to the signs. And that's something that you did. And I admire you for that. And with that said, the final wrap-up question is, what would be your final nuggets of wisdom for anyone who has yet to tap into that energy?
Wow. Well, you know, I believe everyone does have a passion in life. And so follow your instinct, follow that passion, especially for a career. A lot of people are, from what I understand, you know, and just growing up, a lot of people are afraid of branching out on their own, and they're afraid that they're not going to succeed and then they're not going to make it. They're afraid to take the lead. Don't be afraid to take the lead. You know, if you have a passion in life, and if that passion you know, lead you to, like, for me, it's obviously helping the animals, helping the environment. You know, I think God will facilitate you and God will help you. And so, you know, look for the signs. You know, I think they're everywhere in regards to, you know, your mission and your purpose in this life. And everyone here, you know, and that's listening, I'm sure has had, you know, moments where, wow, well, you know, that was presented to me and maybe I should have taken that opportunity. Maybe they didn't take the opportunity. You know, and if it feels right, you know, go with your gut instinct, take the opportunity. If it doesn't feel right, don't go with it. But listen to that little, you know, that little inner voice, you know, everyone has that, you know, that tells you, you know, what's right and what's wrong. And there's always, you know, different paths that each of us can take. But I believe that if you're doing something for the greater good, it will always work out. And especially doing something greater than yourself, it'll work out. Because you don't have yourself at the center. You're having the best interest of this planet, you know, animals, children, whatever your cause may be. You know, you're fighting for something greater. So that's what I don't know. It's my two cents.
I really resonate with that. Katie, thank you so much for everything. Really learned a lot. And I hope a lot of people can take away your story. There's so much in there that, I mean, us young people can start to see, like, we do have to start listening to those signs, listening to what makes us, you know, like, feel alive in the day. Like, for you, it's animals. For me, it's having meaningful conversations. For everyone is different. So I really, really love that.
Yeah, exactly. And always do something that makes you happy. Like, if you wake up every morning and you're like, it's not feeling right. I don't like my job. Don't like my boss. You don't have to do it. You're the author of your own book. You're the author of your own book, and you're the writer. So you can write and delete anything that you want in your book. So yeah, I mean, do something that you are passionate about, that you are happy to do every single day, and wake up with that enthusiasm, and you'll be good to go. You're set for life.
Yeah, that's amazing. Great way to end it. And thank you again, and keep doing what you're doing. Really enjoy just the wisdom you're putting out. Everyone should start following World Animal News. You're going to learn so much that shit you didn't even know about, and it's going to be mind-blowing.
You've had a lot, but thank you so much for what you do, and God bless you and all your followers. And have a mission and a purpose in this life to make a difference. So
yes, thank you.
God bless.
Take care.
Bye.
There you have it, guys. Katie Cleary. What an amazing story. What an amazing transformation that she went through. And honestly, there were certain parts of that conversation where I had goosebumps coming out of my skin. And it got very emotional for me at one point, because I realized that these are beautiful animals that we may not even see a couple of years down the line because of the human effects that we're causing on our planet. So if you got something out of this, it's take action, step up, be a leader in this movement, and let people know that this is going on. Send them this episode, do whatever you can to get the word out, and let's literally save some species together. Take care, guys.